Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm going to try to talk about Atlantis and Lemuria this morning. And there's just so much information that I've been pulling together. It's interesting how this all tends to work. I'm going to dive right in Contact Report 70 here. For 700 years, the Earth was simply avoided before the descendants of the refugees on Beta Centauri in another space-time configuration set out once again to settle the beautiful blue world. The beautiful blue world is our Earth. And this setting takes place 133,000 years ago, according to our current chronology. Now, these people who are about to set out for the Earth were said to be on Beta Centauri. Beta Centauri, in our space-time configuration, is a trinary star system in the southern constellation of Centaurus. And the distance to this system is about 350 light years. So these people are very advanced. They could travel through space and time without any problem whatsoever. The Beta Centauri system has three components: Beta Centauri A1, A2, and B. Beta Centauri A1 and A2 are both giant stars that have exhausted the hydrogen at their core. And I believe the people that were settled in this area were refugees from the Great War on Earth that broke out after the fall of the civilization of Pelagon. And go back to the previous show that we did if you want to understand more about the civilization of Pelagon. Okay, this was 133,000 Earth years ago, according to our current chronology. And these returnees were led by a man named Atlant and his wife, Caryatide. Both of them were Ishwishes, which means king of wisdom. Sometimes is analogous to the word God in English. God with a lowercase g. In the latest episode, under the leadership of Atlant, the continent of Atlantis was headed for again and again. So they had been here even before this, but I've never heard that elaborated on in the Meyer material. So we're talking 133,000 years ago. But we can see here that it says the continent of Atlantis, which had been headed for again and again and used for millennia, thousands of years, was expanded and made habitable. So somehow they had the technology to actually expand this continent, make it bigger, and to even make it more inhabitable. Now, Caryatide, the wife of Atlantis, helped populate what they called Lesser Atlantis, which hopefully we can talk about at some point. Caryatide's cousin was a man named Muras, who also came here, and he built the gigantic city of Mu, which Atlantis also found in its origin in very early times. Now, the city of Mu is said to be in the area that we call the Gobi Desert today. And the Gobi Desert covers parts of northern and northwestern China, southern Mongolia. Mongolia is north of China and south of Russia. And the Gobi is a large desert region about 1,000 miles long. Now, at this time, I don't think it was a desert. It was very different during that time, and I'll talk more about how the Earth was different at this time. And the reason they constructed these cities so far apart were that the humans had become more clever, and they were trying to avoid war, and they hoped for peace, and they hoped that this great distance between the cities would help ensure the peace and that everyone would stay in their own domains. And this went on for a very long time. They had peace for 1,800 years, to be precise. And then what I see as kind of a historical trend took place again. Scientists, it says, snatched up for themselves power, and they whipped up power lust, and they tried to snatch control for themselves. So before the scientists could strike, we don't know what their plans were, but before they could strike, the people got wind of what was going to happen, and they rose up against him. And the scientists stole some spaceships, and they fled back into these other space-time shifted regions of Beta Centauri. So they went back where they came from. So Atlantis and Lemuria went back into a time of peace. Now, this was about 115,000 years ago. I want to talk a little bit about power. Now, power is the capability or ability to direct or influence the behavior of others in the course of events. Now, I personally have never been one, at least that I'm aware of, to lust for the ability to direct or influence the behavior of others. I really don't have an interest, but this seems to be a big issue, especially with people that go into politics and things like that. And these scientists had a lust for power. And lust can be defined as a passionate or overmastering desire or craving. And when I think of these scientists, I think of fascism. And our government today is becoming more fascist. And fascist government means that there's a tyrant in control that squashes other opinions and uses power to silence other opinions. Now, after 2,000 years, this is another interesting thing. For some reason, these extraterrestrial humans would carry these grudges for time periods that you and I can't even imagine, because we have these shortened lifespans here on the Earth. We only live 80, 70, 100 years, we're gone. But these folks, they keep grudges that last thousands of years. This is just incredible. After 2,000 years, during which the malicious refugees again created a high technical standards and produced many descendants, again on Beta Centauri, they returned to the Earth and they were filled with hate. And their hate increased immeasurably against the extraterrestrial inhabitants of Earth. Now, I can't imagine holding a grudge for 2,000 years, but this is what the My Material says. And were only able to preserve order within their own ranks using terrible punishments. What comes to my mind is these scientists who went back to Beta Centauri. They control their civilization through power, and they probably had a technocracy. They probably had chip implants and the whole bit. It's just my own intuition there. Spurred on through the inhuman hate, they through research and knowledge obtained from it, they drove up their life expectancy to more than 1,000 years. And that's one of the things that our scientists are doing, is doing research to increase lifespan. And this reminds me of transhumanism. Their single wish was to gain control over the Earth, for which reason every individual was taught wicked intrigues, and they were taught the craft of war, which reminds me of terrorism. Okay, after 2,000 years, again, can you imagine holding a grudge for 2,000 years? This hate-drenched people was so far along that it could venture an attack on the Earth. Therefore, it manned its ships and came newly to the Earth under the leadership of an Ishwish named Eris the Barbarian. And I've talked about Eris before, and I refer you to previous episodes. Now, this was allegedly happened 113,000 years ago. Eris was said to be very bestial and barbarous in his disposition. His power was feared. And like Pelagon, remember Pelagon, his civilization was here on the Earth about 150,000 years ago. Pelagon was a king of wisdom who was very benevolent. And he treated the people, the native earth people, with respect. The native earth people were referred to as Evas by the extraterrestrials. And they were a dark-skinned people, which has tremendous implications. The native earth humans are dark-skinned. So if you're a white-skinned like me, it tells you a little bit about where we come from. And it probably isn't here, let me tell you. Anyway, Eris had 200 high-grade scientists with him, and they also organized themselves where there were sub-leaders. And it says here in the Meyer material, Enlightening Action, they came back to the earth, robbing and murdering and taking possession of the land. They conquered the northern regions where the climate was moderate and good. And here I have to stop for a second, because these northern regions are known as Hyperborea. Now, at this time, the Earth was shifted differently on its axis. So Florida was in the northern area now. Somehow, the poles were very moderate climates. They were very warm at this time. So Eris conquered Hyperborea. And I've talked about the Hyperboreans before. Allegedly, they have a city in Mount Shasta in Washington State. The Hyperboreans are blonde people. They've been here for about 130,000, 150,000 years. There's only about 700 folks in this city that's located in Mount Shasta, and you can sometimes see their golden spherical spacecraft come out of the eastern side of that mountain. And you can also see visiting craft come into that mountain. Now, they have, the Hyperboreans have a kind of a beam weapon that's used to stun people if native Earth humans or current surface dwellers get too close. They'll sometimes use these beam weapons to stun the Earth people. Just, they don't want an interaction with the Earth people. My understanding is they're much higher, at a much higher evolution than we are. The Hyperboreans worked with Noah. There was a king of wisdom in the Hyperboreans, one of these quote-unquote gods with a small g, who was a very knowledgeable extraterrestrial, worked with a man named Noachadnezzar. Noachadnezzar, his name eventually got shortened to Noah over the years, and the story got changed where Noah was talking to the creator of the universe, but he wasn't. He was talking to an advanced extraterrestrial, which warned him about a coming, approaching flood. So the Hyperboreans, as far as I know, are still here. Their city is located in Mount Shasta. It's an underground city. It's located in the mountain itself. They also have some smaller bases near the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. So that's a little background information on the Hyperboreans. The Hyperboreans used to dwell on the surface, and they dwelled in what was near the North Pole, which was actually a very warm, moderate climate before the pole shift. So anyway, Eris took over Hyperborea, and they robbed and they murdered and they took possession of the land. This was far in the north again, before the upset of the Earth's axis. So that then these regions exist in a very moderate climate. Anyway, we'll say that. Coming from the north, Eris had a son named Eris II, and he took his conquering people into India, Pakistan, and Persia, and they struck the forefathers of the Sumerians, who the Sumerians, by the way, were a peace-loving people. And they were dark-skinned, but not truly black people. They were dark-skinned, though, not Negroid. They were like Europeans, and they were tall, and they are they rose from a race of former Syrian refugees. So the Meyer material tells us that in the ancient past, there were some people here from the star Cirrus in a different space-time configuration. And if you're new to the show, the Meyer material says not only do we have just billions of galaxies in our universe, but our universe is divided into different space-time configurations or different definitions. Anyway, Eris II came down from Hyperborea, took over India, Pakistan, Persia. Now, India of today was called Aran, after Eris II. And it actually split off from Hyperborea after about 210 years. And they kind of allied themselves with the inhabitants of Mu and Agartha, which I talked about. Remember, Atlantis was an island continent in the Atlantic Ocean, roughly between South America and Africa, probably extending up into the North American regions. But Lemuria was in the what we would call the Gobi Desert today, which is in northern China, southern Mongolia. They built a gigantic city called Mu. Now, underneath the city were two underground cities called Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta. They were connected by underground tunnels. So anyway, the Earth was under attack by Eris the Barbarian. I kind of look at these people like transhumanists. I'm not saying that's the way it was, but they were scientists. Eris took over Hyperborea. His son took over India, Pakistan, and those areas. Eris the First constantly troubled Mu and Greater Atlantis by wicked war activities. And during around a half a millennia, or said very precisely, during 502 years, the war machination continued until Eris the First, who in the meanwhile had become old and weak, succeeded in infiltrating wicked elements of his hater humans into the leading controlling ranks of Atlantis and Mu, who secretly stirred up violence and hate for so long, as also did their descendants over several centuries, until through boundless intrigues, Mu and Atlantis were able to completely be destroyed some centuries later. Now, a very, very brief overview of that war that took place, I will give you, try to give you here. The Atlanteans struck first. They had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of ships with these beams, and they melted Atlantis and Lemuria to the ground. Some of the Lemurians escaped, and they went to our asteroid belt, and using nuclear power and electromagnetic power, they took one of these large asteroids from the previously destroyed Melona. And I refer to back to other episodes that we've done talking about the destruction of Melona. And they brought this back to the Earth like a great weapon. So I will talk about this great weapon that the Lemurians used against Atlantis. Okay. It was a planetoid several kilometers in diameter whose exact size we still have not determined. With atomic and electromagnetic energies, it was pushed out of its orbit and took a course directed towards Earth. The self-rotation of the planetoid was braked and stopped while they built a propulsion drive on the side away from the Earth, a drive of gigantic size with the goal of immense acceleration of the little planet, which would be directed by rushing speed into its aim only less than a half a day before the attack of the Atlanteans against Mu, the cosmic bomb was improved. So they were actually working on this before the Atlanteans destroyed Mu, which I didn't know. Now, this is called a death bomb of human delusion. It was of great importance. When Atlantis started her attack, the producers of the deadly missile were informed by hyperwave impulses within a few seconds of the beginning events and were commanded to get the deadly missile started. So the Atlanteans struck Mu with all these ships with their beam weapons and melted it to the ground. And the Lemurians said, okay, get the deadly missile started. So this planetoid, a few seconds after the receipt of the command, on the side of the planetoid turned away from the Earth, a thousand suns seems to rush into the dark cosmos. And by gigantic power, the monster started moving. This was a big piece of Melona. Rapidly, the speed of the death messenger increased, guided by the control of the monster scientists who, sitting on the planetoid, observed their tasks, themselves also dedicated to death. Meanwhile, on Earth, the Atlanteans destroyed the city of Mu, leveling it to the ground. Those who had escaped into the subterranean branch cities and into space, those who had not escaped in the subterranean branch cities, remember, under Mu was the Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta. They were connected by these tunnels. Some of the Lemurians fled into space. Some of them fled underground. Atlanteans and nothing any longer witnessed their existence. The victorious Atlanteans returned to their island kingdom and celebrated their victory over Mu in great transports of joy. But their joy did not last long because they had barely begun their festivities when there came in overtumbling one another, announcements about the raging danger from the cosmos. Only a few high governors and scientists were able to take refuge into their spaceships and escape into the cosmos before the catastrophe broke upon Atlantis and submerged it into the sea. Those destined for death saw the disaster rushing near. High in the sky and far away in the northwest, above the ocean and the distant continent, like from nowhere, suddenly appeared a dark heavenly body, which raging fast came nearer, whose backside pushed away glistening light. The monster shot along and became a giant within a few seconds. At first only visible as a falling star, it rushed within a few seconds to very close and of gigantic size, trailing a fiery tail. Now listen, this describes the people of Atlantis who were watching this thing come in. It said they were fascinated and paralyzed, their eyes open wide in horror. The humans stared at this monster, which so suddenly and noiselessly rushed near, yet then suddenly gave out an unbearable howling sound when it entered the first layers of the atmosphere and was exposed to its friction. 2 seconds later, the planetoid glowed like a supernova and generated a heat of more than 34,000 degrees. Now, this is where I get into cognitive dissonance a little bit, because I can't imagine a heat of 34,000 degrees. But it says what happened is whole regions of land burnt to glowing ashes within seconds from the heat of this planetoid that rushed down from the hurrying giant. Then suddenly, the cosmic bomb exploded at less than 172 kilometers in height. So it exploded in the air. And thousands of meteorites were formed that rained all over the earth. But it split into two great pieces, like two great fists, which slammed into the Atlantic Ocean. I will continue to read. It broke into many thousands of greater and smaller meteorites, which flung like small atomic bombs towards Earth and destroyed everything in their way with great force that was within reach of the impact and the pressure waves. Now, this is when the pole shift starts. After the Earth is hit by this large cosmic bomb. And one of the values in studying this information is that hopefully this will somehow wake us all up enough to stop this horrific path that we're on, because two civilizations have destroyed themselves in the Earth. As Graham Hancock says, we are people with amnesia because we don't remember these civilizations. We think these tremendous megalithic structures like the Great Pyramid were built by simple people with simple tools, but the evidence of this whole thing is staring us in the face. We're just asleep. We're amnesiac. We're a people completely disoriented. The whole earth shook in the huge explosion, and thunder rolled over the globe. The earth was badly shaken, and many volcanoes broke out of her. Two great parts of the exploding planetoid crashed like titanic fists into the Atlantic Ocean and hit through the hard earth crust at the bottom of the sea. It seemed like the earth would die because the impact power of the remnant pieces was greater than 32,000 hydrogen bombs. And as you dispose of presently in such absurdity. Okay. Maybe that's enough of that. It goes on to describe this giant column of water that went up into the atmosphere and the tremendous tsunami tidal wave that rushed over Atlantis and destroyed everything, destroyed every living creature, submerged Atlantis. And this is the last great destruction of our civilization during the time of Atlantis. I have a caller, 901. Sorry it took me so long to bring you on the air, but I'll bring 901 on the air. Hello, 901. Who is this?
Hi, this is Lenise.
How do you spell your name?
L-E-N-E-S-E.
Yep. What part of the country are you in?
I'm in Memphis, Tennessee.
Well, welcome, Memphis. It's always good to hear from people all over the world. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm out and about, starting to run errands.
Are you enjoying our show on Atlantis and Lemuria?
Yeah, I saw the show title and decided to listen in. But I don't have a question. Somehow my phone just put me into the queue on its own.
That's okay. Well,
yeah.
Lenise, I appreciate you listening, and I'll let you go back to listening. And
okay.
Welcome to the show. There's a lot of backstory behind this, where all this information comes from. And thanks, Lenise. I'll put you back on your... So I'll take you off the air now. We are reading information from the Billy Meyer contact notes. And one of the fascinating things that we learn from the Meyer material is this history that we have, the history that's been taken away from us. I believe in the Council of Nicaea in about 300 AD, a lot of the history books were rewritten, and they took a lot of knowledge away from us. One of the things they took away from the people of the earth, not only their history, they took away our knowledge of the human spirit. And I'll just get off on this tangent just slightly, because deep within our midbrain is something called the human spirit. And the human spirit has many, many lifetimes, according to Meyer material. The human spirit resides in the midbrain. The midbrain is the area located between the two hemispheres of the brain. The human spirit is it's just spiritual energy. It's no bigger than the head of a pin. And the midbrain is the area that connects the left brain, which they say is your analytical portion, and the right brain, which they say is your creative centers. Now, if you feel back on the back of your head, close to where your neck connects to your skull, there's a little bump. And I believe that rostral bump on the lateral part of the midbrain is where the superior colliculus. That's the midbrain consists of the tectum, the inferior colliculus, and the superior colliculus. And I want to tell you a little of the research I've done on superior colliculus. Now, in non-mammal species, including the fish and the birds, the tectum is considered one of the largest components of the brain. In mammals, and especially primates, we get this massive expansion of the cerebral cortex, which is, you know, the frontal lobe and whatnot. Now, the back, though, in the center of the midbrain, this is where the integrating center is for eye movements. And from the 1970s to the 1990s, they did neural recordings from mammals, mostly monkeys, and they focused primarily on researching what this superior colliculus does, and it controls our eye movements. And in the 1990s, the animals in these experiments were allowed to move their head, and the scientists found out that the midbrain it leads to multisensory integration. So it deals with not only sight, but temperature regulation and hearing and various other things. So anyway, the Meyer material says that we reincarnate, the human spirit reincarnates, not your body, not even your personality reincarnates, but the human spirit, this tiny needle-like energy that animates every part of the cell structure of the body. This has many, many lifetimes. When the spirit form comes out of the human body at death, it is put into an area called the spiritual realms. Now, the universal consciousness, which we call God today, incorrectly I would say, the universal consciousness takes your past life memories and puts them in the universal storage banks. When it's time for us to reincarnate again, our human spirit is placed back in the body of the child 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. The comprehensive consciousness block comes down and makes sure you get a new personality with a new material consciousness. What's placed in your subconscious is the memories of your previous lives. And you will receive inspiration from your previous lives, and you will also get impulses from the storage banks from your previous lives. So, that is the purpose of our life. The purpose of our life is to gather wisdom and evolve over many, many lifetimes. And that's one of the things that I hope that studying the Meyer material can do for people, is that this show will help us all evolve so we can not experience the disasters of our ancestors in Atlantis and Lemuria, who destroyed themselves, and even the civilization of Pelagon that destroyed itself. But as you know, it looks like we're back on the path of self-destruction again. But I think wisdom and knowledge is the way to avoid repeating these global conflagrations that have occurred in the past. Now, I've been very, very long-winded today, which I hadn't planned on doing at all. But I have another call in here, 860. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Can you tell us your name?
Susan.
Hi, Susan. What part of the world are you calling from?
Excuse, what'd you say again?
What state or country or where are you calling
Connecticut.
From? Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Welcome. How are you today?
Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to know how we can connect to that information. And because that's what I've been working on is trying to receive the gifts back.
If you want some of this information, there's a website. It's called Future of Mankind. It's www.futureofmankind.co.uk. Now, that's kind of hard to remember. If you Google Billy Meyer, if you type Billy Meyer into Google, the second result that comes back will be the Future of Mankind site. And what you'll find on the Future of Mankind site is some of the Meyer contact reports. There's a link on the right that you can click that will bring up the contact reports, and I recommend that you go down to where it has the Pleiadian Pleiarian contact reports. If you click that link, then it'll have listed by number contacts 100 through 600 and links. Some of them have been translated, some of them have not been translated. So, again, Google Billy Meyer in your Google, and the second link should be the Future of Mankind site. Much of the information I'm talking about today comes from Contact Report 70. Anyway,
okay.
I hope I answered your question.
Yeah,
Did you have any other questions or comments?
Not really.
Well, Susan, I appreciate you listening, and I hope things are going okay for you in Connecticut.
Yeah, they're getting cold, but they're good.
They're getting cold here in Ohio, too. Thanks for calling, Susan.
Thank you.
I'll take you off the air, and you're welcome, of course, to keep listening. I love it when people call in, and anyone else that wants to call in is welcome to do so. I think we lost Eve somehow. Eve had joined us as well. Okay, where was I? I was talking about the human spirit. I've been talking about Atlantis and Lemuria. One of the other writings of Billy Meyer, Edward Albert Meyer, is called The Goblet of Truth. And I want to talk a little bit about this writing called The Goblet of Truth, because it deals more with our time, the time that we live in now, and some of the things that we may have in our future if we don't straighten out. There's this wonderful passage called What the Truth Knows to Say in the Goblet of Truth, and it talks about respect or venerability towards the entirety of nature and towards the creation and its laws. Venerability means commanding respect because of great age or impressive dignity. Another definition for venerability is impressive or interesting because of age, antique appearance. Venerability can also mean old and respected, valued because of old age. So what Billy writes about is how that the human beings of Earth must learn to live in harmony with creation, with nature, with the earth, with the universe. And I always quote from this passage because it's very touching to me and I think it's very informative. It says, "Rivers, stones, plants, animals, lakes, seas, brooks, springs, the air and water, trees and bushes, and everything that crawls and flies here on the earth are life forms with a spirit form, with very many of them being connected by psychic swinging waves." Now, the Meyer material talks about these harmonious swinging waves that come from an area in our spirit form called the Gemut. These swinging waves are mentioned in the Goblet of Truth, And I think they're important to understand what's going on inside the human spirit. Now, one of the things I haven't understood yet is the next passage entirely. It says, all of them are wise and heightened that communicate with one another. Well, what is wise and heightened? Wise and heightened is a German term that talks about immaterial or material forms without a self-determining possibility of evolution. Some examples of wise and heightened in the German would be air, water, stones. They, the Meyer information, also talks about the universal consciousness. And it describes it, the universal consciousness, as a wise and heightened. Wise and heightened in the sense that the creator of our universe is a super intelligence. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution. It is not necessarily an anthropomorphic being the way our religions have identified it. We have the religious notion of God. The universal consciousness, now this is strange, but bear with me. The universal consciousness, the superintelligence which created all things, it doesn't even really have a personality the way we think of it. There are scientists now that are referring to something, they call it sometimes the divine matrix. Greg Braden, he's a scientist, he calls it the divine matrix. Another scientist does use the term universal consciousness. Anyway, what the Meyer material is trying to teach us is that we live in a system with a tightly woven web of life. And what it means to be woven is that there's an interlacing that occurs. And almost like the forming of a fabric or a material. To interlace means to cross one another, typically passing alternatively under and over. Nature's like that. The word indissoluble is used. I like to bring the analogy is when you go into the forest, you can hear nature communicate. You can hear the birds sing. You can hear the crickets. You can hear the cicadas. They all communicate with one another. They all are living creatures. They're connected by these psychic swinging waves. And if you want to see the example of that, watch a group of birds move as a unit. 30 or 40 of them fly a couple hundred yards away and they all land in a tree at the same time. What the Meyer material is saying is we're all part of this tightly woven web of life. You can't destroy nature in one area and expect it not to affect something else. This is the basis, the Meyer material says, for the tightly woven and indissoluble web of all life. And in this wise, no life form strives to rise up over the others within their group and to set themselves up over others. Because each life form contains a basic goodness and not evil. After all, evil is learned in practice as the result of inappropriate doings and Ausartung. Now, that Ausartung is another German word that describes us getting badly out of control of the good human nature. So the Meyer material says that every life form has a basic goodness and not evil, but evil is something that's learned. And these kings of wisdom, some of them, would get very badly out of control of the good nature. We were talking earlier about two of these ancient Ishwishes called Eris the Barbarian and his son, Eris the Second. Eris the Barbarian took over Hyperborea. Eris the Second took over the area of India and Pakistan. And eventually this led to the Great War between Atlantis and Lemuria. And The Meyer material goes on in the Goblet of Truth to explain that irrespective of what is involved, whether simple or fanatical religions and sects and stubborn nationalism and fascism, migratory politics, terrorism, or neo-capitalism, all of these directions are aberrations of the negative and the evil and represent an immense threat to the peoples of the earth, particularly in the third millennium. So let's break some of this down. I want to talk about fascism. Well, actually, I want to play a clip on fascism, and I want to stop talking for a little while. Fascism. What is fascism? What is the Meyer material describing when it talks about fascism? Fascism, fascist power, is where a leader will rise to power. Think of our current government. And this leader will use a kind of a tyranny or a brute force to control people. Let's talk about, first of all, what is fascism?
No political system conjures more fear and hostility than that of fascism. However, it is one of the least understood political systems of the 20th century. Fascists see their nation as a single organic entity that binds people together by their shared ancestral past. The nation is a unifying force. The nation almost gains cult-like status. Mussolini stated in 1922, "For us, the nation is not just territory, but something spiritual." The main struggle is that of nation and race.
Okay, let me start this next clip. I think it talks a little bit about the rise of fascism in Italy.
In 1929, a delegation arrived in Rome to meet Italy's Prime Minister, Benito Mussolini. Their leader that day was Ettore Vatsa, a wealthy Turin banker who was immensely proud to meet Mussolini.
He is serene. Seated at his desk, he motions to us to advance. It was the first time I was to see the face of Il Duce up close.
Vatsa was a fervent supporter of the fascists, but he was also a prominent Jew.
On hearing of my affirmation for the unshakable loyalty of Italian Jews to the fatherland, His Excellency Mussolini looks me straight in the eye and says with a voice that penetrates straight down to my heart, "I have never doubted it."
In gamba. Grazie.
What these men have in common is a dream of a greater nation. But the dream will not become reality, and instead Mussolini and his fascist movement will bring about Italy's darkest hour. Mussolini will eventually betray his country, his family, and the man that greets him so warmly that day.
So Mussolini was one of the fascists in our past that rose to power, and as it said there, he ultimately was a traitor against his own people. And I think these people, that these tyrants that gain power, often do that. I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened after the destruction of Atlantis in Lemuria. We just described the great meteor, which was brought back by the Lemurians and eventually sent the whole Earth into a pole shift and caused total devastation on the Earth. Well, eventually, some of these scientists came back again to the Earth, these extraterrestrial humans, one of which was Eris the 11th, a very distant descendant of Eris the 1st. And was murdered in his old age many thousands of years later and around 100,000 years after the destruction of Atlantis and Mu. Now, Again, this is about 11,500 years ago. Eris the 11th probably came from Beta Centauri, took control. Think of him as a fascist. And he was controlling what remained of the Earth at that time. The people were climbing out of the rubble of Atlantis and Lemuria. He came to power, Eris the 11th, but his third-born son, Jehovah, took command over what they call the hater people here. Now, there were three earthly people on the earth at this time. I want to tell you who was on the earth at this time. The one earth people consisted of the descendants of the Armorous people, who had lived today in the region of Armenia. They were the descendants of an Ishwish, another king of wisdom named Armorous, who settled there with his race about 133,000 years ago. The second earth people that existed, now this is after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, the second earth people fell under the control of Jehovans. Jehovan was the son of Eris the Barbarian, who actually probably killed his father. That was usually the pattern of these great leaders in the past. These, I'll call them fascists for lack of a better word. The second earth people fell under the Jehovah's control. They were the distant descendants of the Aryans. Remember, the Nazis were always searching for the evidence of the Aryan people, who mingled themselves with the still very underdeveloped, pure earthly and lethargic native population of the earth. Okay, so the Sumerians were expelled. The second earth peoples were under Jehovah's control. The first earth people were the descendants of this Ishwish Armorous, who was in the area of Armenia today. The third earth people was actually in and of itself not even a people, because it was actually an alliance of gypsies who were on the earth. Again, this is 11,500 years ago, after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. Now, these gypsies were interspersed with Jehovah's spies and saboteurs, who were bringing dissension everywhere, greedily drawing everything to themselves, and were eager to murder, it says, burn and rob, and for which one named the Hebrons by the original language of our forefathers. They were called the Hebrons and later the Hebrons. Now, these names correspond to gypsy, to scum, outcast in the sense of the original language, which therefore had not been transferred to your present languages, because the sense of your present term gypsy still only means wanderers or unsettled ones. Thereby, it should be clarified that the present gypsy people have not the least in common with the Hebrons of that time, who proclaim themselves the firstborn and the chosen ones, just as much as do their distant descendants, who today still dare to assert this. In truth, the Hebrons were the real scum and outcasts of humanity, because through the fights and quarrels with the whole world, constantly stirred up and yet further spread, which had been maintained to the present day. The earth will first finally be calm when this power-hungry and bloodthirsty Hebron alliance, and which themselves named as a people, which split into various sects, addicted to world control and so forth, is finally dissolved. So perhaps if you wanted to identify who the power elite were in the world, it's the leftover Hebrons, is what the Meyer material refers to. Now Jehovan, with an N, ruled the earth until about 3,660 years ago, until he was likewise treacherously murdered by his son Jehave, who then snatched up the rule for himself after 340 years of his father's reign. Now again, call them fascists, call them what you will. These were the leaders of the earth after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. Jahave ruled wickedly and always screamed for blood and revenge until about 3,320 years ago in your chronology, during which time he sired three sons, and listen to the name of these sons. Erisame, who we'll talk about, Ptah, and I think this may be the reincarnation of one of Billy's contacts, Ptah and Salam. Megalomaniacal like their father Jehovah, he let himself be proclaimed as the creator and celebrated as such. Like his father, he caused terrible devastation among the three human earth peoples. We were talking about them earlier. And he demanded blood and death. These were these Ishwishes of the past. And he was as addicted to power as his father, Jehave, who was also the firstborn of Erisame. Oh, Erisame was the firstborn of Jehave. Let's back up. Jehovah is in control. He claims himself the creator. And eventually, Jehave comes to power. Jehave has a firstborn son, Erisame, who also wanted to take his father's power. So Erisame murdered his father Jehave and wanted to snatch up power for himself. Now Erisame was the guy who eventually was kicked off the earth by Ptah and Salam, but he snuck back later and he settled under the old cubicle constructions of the Great Pyramid, these 72,000-year-old cubicle constructions. And they formed what became the Giza intelligences here on the earth. And the Giza intelligences were the people that influenced our religions here on the earth. And that's how we got the trouble, part of the trouble here that we have in the third millennium, because the Giza intelligences have influenced the people of the earth through religions. They work with Hitler. They work with the Thule Society in Germany, and I think they have been intertwined with the elite here on the earth. I want to thank you for listening. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. We're talking about Atlantis, Lemuria, and the Goblet of Truth. We will be back at 8 p.m. Eastern. We will be talking to Michael Horn at 8 p.m. Eastern, and then Sheldon Neidel. Have a good day. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for the call-ins from Memphis, Tennessee, and Connecticut. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the Meyer material. Look out on the Future Mankind site and read it for yourself. I suggest you print it out. It will help you very, very much and save you a little eye strain. Have a good afternoon.